Chapter 24. Persecution and Progress. The arrow that doth wound the dove darts not from those who watch and love. Mary Baker Eddy. 1896. At this period of Christian Science history, Mrs. Eddy's students called her mother. So the leader in the February journal was entitled, quote, "The Mother's Communion Address," end quote. Following the communion address was another short article from Mrs. Eddy's pen, entitled simply, "Questions and Answers," in which her answer to the question, "When will you take a class in Christian Science?" began, quote, "I shall not teach again at present, and perhaps never," end quote. Her answer to how often she would speak in her Boston church was, quote, "Very seldom. The hour has struck for Christian Scientists to do their own work, to appreciate the signs of the times, to demonstrate self-knowledge and self-government, and to demonstrate, as this period demands, over all sin, disease, and death," end quote. The mother felt the needs of her children and touched the hearts of many in her final paragraph, which began, "My sympathies are deeply enlisted for the students of students, having already seen in many instances their talents, culture, and singleness of purpose to uplift the race." This met the vibrating chord in the field and brought an avalanche of grateful response. But there was an undercurrent of a different nature in Boston, emanating from Josephine Woodbury. Near the end of January, Mrs. Eddy wrote to William Johnson, "Settle your questions with W's students at once. It must be done for reasons most important." 2 or 3 weeks later, in another letter to Mr. Johnson, she said, "I shall not notice Mr. Woodbury's false statements in his letter. I taught him Christian Science, and if I did him good, that satisfies me. The hardest thing I had to bear was his declaration that I tortured his wife, when I never knowingly gave her the least trouble, but have, as my church knows, tried to restore her to the church and to save her character." On the 18th of March, she wrote to her church, "I hereby request that you reconsider your vote on excommunication of Mrs. Josephine C. Woodbury and receive her again into your church. This Christian forgiveness can do you no harm, and if it will help her spiritually, this effort will be worthy of your Christian endeavors and of my sincere hope and inexhaustible charity." 6 days later, on the 24th of March, Mrs. Woodbury was reinstated to probationary membership, but the leader's sincere hope was unfulfilled. Frank Woodbury's statement that Mrs. Eddy tortured his wife had a grain of truth to it because of the fact that the leader's honesty, purity, spirituality, and inexhaustible charity were a constant rebuke to Josephine's opposite inclinations, and this wayward student sought revenge. Mrs. Eddy made a special point in her letter of April 1st to the first members that she made no complaint. "I wish to thank you for indulging my request to give Mrs. Woodbury one more trial on probation. This you have nobly done. Now it behooves you as Christians to consider her case at this meeting and the evidences of her character and present conduct fairly and finally, and act as becomes this church justly. Since your last acceptance of her on probation, instead of gratitude, therefore, she has been circulating letters wherein the specific charges are against me and our church. But I make no complaint. Now it is requisite for the members to speak out and testify of what they have heard her say and give evidence that their action today is just and proper. There was always the hope that this exposure and the just and proper action of the church could bring about reform, but the first members were still closer to being Orthodox than scientific Christians. So, on the morning of April 4th, Mr. Johnson called upon a number of people whose knowledgeable testimony in regard to Mrs. Woodbury's acts presented quite a case against her, and that same day the first members excommunicated Josephine Woodbury forever. Calvin Fry was apprised of this action, but he was requested not to tell Mrs. Eddy. The first members who knew that Mrs. Woodbury and her students were bombarding Mrs. Eddy with letters which her secretaries were withholding as not worthy of the leader's attention, were willing to assume full responsibility for the excommunication. Later, Mr. Johnson sent a copy of, quote, original writing of evidence in W's case, April 4th, 1896, end quote, to Pleasant View, but did not mention the action the church had taken. A penciled note in Mrs. Eddy's handwriting reads, April 29th, 1896. My dear student, I have no chance to return this record of crimes except via express. God will settle her account, and I have nothing to do with it. How prosperous our cause is! Truly, we have great cause for rejoicing. Oh, that God will save her in His own way. With love, Mother. Most of the leaders' communications at this period were on happier topics, for it was true that the cause was prospering, and they had great cause for rejoicing. The popularity of Christian Science caused the Mother Church to inaugurate a second Sunday service in April, and the prosperity they were experiencing enabled the directors to make expenditures heretofore impossible. To curb their excesses, the leader added a terse sentence to her letter of April 11th. This letter first stated the need for forenoon and afternoon Sunday services and recommended salary increases for the readers because of their increased work. Next, she approved raising the salary of Laura Sargent, who traveled from Pleasant View to Boston each week to care for the mother's room on Fridays, and who often went on church errands in addition to her work as a member of the Bible Lesson Committee. But the leader's pointed closing sentence read, quote, when the doctor is restored to his place on the committee and the hogs are all fed, then can Mother have her 1 hour? End quote. But even in their prosperity, the church was not quite through with Josephine Woodbury. They published a notice in the June Journal which stated, on the 20th day of April, 1895, Mrs. Josephine C. Woodbury was admitted to probationary membership of the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston for 2 years. On November 6, 1895, her name was dropped from such membership. On March 24, 1896, she was reinstated. On April 4, 1896, she was finally and forever excommunicated from such probationary membership. When Mrs. Eddy read the notice on June 11th, she wrote Mrs. Woodbury that she had not advised the excommunication and knew not of its publication until she read it in the journal. On the same day, a telegram from the leader to William B. Johnson stated, "I did not advise it or know that you published Woodbury's excommunication till reading it. Say and do nothing more about her." The journal for May contained a very lengthy editorial by Hannah, which was an answer to a recent attack on Christian Science, emanating from a Unitarian pulpit in Concord, New Hampshire. Both the attack and Hannah's response were published in pamphlet form, and by now they are both forgotten. But Mrs. Eddy's response to the attack of the Unitarian minister, entitled Love, continues to be sung the world over. All five stanzas of her tender hymn appeared on the first page of the June journal, and only the second stanza has seen slight revision. Brood o'er us with thy sheltering wing, neath which our spirits blend, like brother birds that soar and sing, and on the same branch bend. The arrow that doth wound the dove darts not from those who watch and love. If thou the bending reed wouldst break, by thought or word unkind, pray that his spirit all partake, who loved and healed mankind. Seek holy thoughts and heavenly strain that make man one in love remain. A notice appeared in the June journal, which is important because of Mrs. Eddy's correction, which followed in the very next issue. The notice in question stated, "In our editorial in the last April number, we said that no one had the right to confer the degree of CSB other than Mrs. Eddy herself, as president of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. We had forgotten for the moment that General E. N. Bates was for a time president of the college. Of course, any degrees he conferred during such time were authorized." Mrs. Eddy's correction of Hannah's misapprehension was immediate. Her response, published in the July journal, stands for all time. Card. The question has been raised without my previous knowledge as to the validity of the degrees given by General E. N. Bates to his class taught in the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. They were as genuine as those that I conferred on my class. Why? Because I gave him permission to do this. The corporation did not grant this permission, but after I did, the corporation sanctioned his, quote, management and instruction, end quote. The records show that the corporation never elected but one president for the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, and that one was Mary Baker G. Eddy, its first and last president. Mary Baker Eddy. The import of this card grows clearer when we become aware that ever since the sixth edition of 1883, the title page of Science and Health has read, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker G. Eddy, President of Massachusetts Metaphysical College. By June of 1896, the president of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College had made an important addition to Science and Health. It was the addition of the word sun to the glossary. Benny was still in Boston and had been appointed to various positions, but he seemed to be mainly a channel for malicious mesmerism to reach the leader. Almost from the time of the adoption, she had experienced one trial after another. Few ever knew how severe some of the trials were. Clara Shannon has told of a time that Foster Eddy was driving Mother along State Street when the City of Concord was doing work on the street and had a big hole dug in the middle. The doctor drove right into the hole and out again, and Mrs. Eddy was thrown out of the carriage as it went down and back up. The wheel was just about to come over her neck and face, and she said afterward, quote, "Love stopped that wheel and would not let it come over me," end quote. In April of 1896, Mrs. Eddy had written to her student, John Linscott, "I long to be able to say my warfare is accomplished. For 7, almost 8 long years, I have had the indescribable, quote, sharper than vinegar to the teeth, end quote, and still have it notwithstanding all that I have done for him, all my prayers, and Mother's evening hymn, and patience. God help us both to endure to the end." The new definition in the glossary marked the beginning of the end, and surely the first sentence of that definition was the savior for both Mrs. Eddy and her son. Quote, "Son, the Son of God, the Messiah or Christ," end quote. Benny soon agreed to accept the mission in Philadelphia, and Joseph Armstrong became Mrs. Eddy's publisher. The mother was not the only one to rejoice. William Dana Orcutt of the University Press wrote, quote, "When in July 1896, she announced to me that she had dismissed Dr. Foster Eddy and appointed Joseph Armstrong as her publisher, the news was received with a sigh of relief and with optimistic expectations," end quote. In August, when Foster Eddy finally left to form a new church in Philadelphia, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Judge Hanna, quote, "Today God gave me the victory, and Benny is saved," end quote. A few weeks later, a notice in the journal stated simply that Joseph Armstrong had been made publisher of Science and Health, as well as all Mrs. Eddy's other works, and to order from him hereafter. This same issue published Foster Eddy's letter written from Philadelphia on September 5th. From Dr. Eddy, "Dear Editor, permit me through the journal to thank the, quote, many friends, end quote, who gave me such a kindly goodbye and Godspeed when I sailed away from them the last Saturday in August. I was not expecting to see so many friends, to receive such a beautiful bouquet. or witness so large a manifestation of love, which for the time seemed to incapacitate me for expressing myself in a manner I would have liked to. In the envelope accompanying the bouquet were these words, quote, "With much love from your many friends," end quote. Like the blending of the perfume of those beautiful flowers into a unity of sweetness, so may all our lives and work blend into one grand unity of purpose, fraternity, charity, love, that shall not be broken through the cycles of eternity. Will those friends please accept my sincere thanks for their beautiful gift of flowers and love, and may we all consciously, speedily sail out into the ocean of infinite love, out of sight of sinful material sense and self, where all is harmony and love reigns supreme. We all know to a certainty that if we embark on the ship, Christian Science, prepared by God through His faithful servant, our Blessed Mother, and work our passage faithfully according to its chart, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by the Reverend Mary Baker Eddy, we shall surely reach the desired haven and become perfected in all good. May our united efforts help each other to accomplish all desired scientific results. With love, E. J. Foster Eddy. Before Benny's departure, the leader had received a letter from a student in Chelsea, which brought a vital issue to the surface. E. E. Williams, who had been in Mrs. Eddy's primary class in 1887, wrote on July 13th for a solution to this problem in practice. "I am your only student in Chelsea now. I have sent my patients who desire to study to normal students. Some I have led along 2 or 3 years before they have studied. This has seemed to have the effect upon the student of studying with 2 teachers, for they still cling to me. This has given me considerable to meet in belief. While I recognize Science and Health as the only teacher, and that there is but one who is, quote, literally fit and spiritually endowed, end quote, yet in looking back, it seems to me that it would have been for the greatest good of the greatest number if I could have taught my own patients, rather than to have sent them to other teachers. I have a fair practice here, and am frequently asked to teach. I do not wish to deviate from the divine order by teaching without your approval. Just a word from you will be valued beyond expression and will be a law to me." Mrs. Eddy's word to this student and to all her students appeared on the first page of the August Journal under the title, quote, "My Students and Thy Students," end quote. The penultimate paragraph states, "Any student having received instruction in a primary class from me or from a loyal student of Christian Science and afterwards studied thoroughly Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures can enter upon the gospel work of teaching Christian Science and so fulfill the command of Christ. Before entering this sacred field of labor, the student must have studied faithfully the latest editions of my works and be a good Bible scholar and a devout, consecrated Christian." The manual saw a good deal of revision and expansion during its first year, but the leader was distressed by the need for such laws of limitation. On August 7th, when sending the directors another bylaw and some words of correction, she added, "When, if ever, will all the members of this church, even while under the rod, behave themselves as Christian Scientists and not have to be put into straitjackets to keep them from quarreling in the sackcloth of this solemn hour?" A notice in the August Journal announced that a second edition of James Gilman's book, Pleasant View, was available and included, quote, "many new views, among them the former home of Mrs. Eddy at Bow, New Hampshire," end quote. While the university press was engaged in printing the 111th edition of Science and Health, the first to appear with the imprint of Joseph Armstrong replacing that of Dr. Foster Eddy, the nation was engaged in the presidential election campaign of 1896. As usual, mortal minds set up one major issue for mortal minds to debate, and the issue in 1896 was gold versus silver. One political party asserted that silver could solve all of the nation's economic woes, and the other contended that gold was the only savior. More specifically, the Republican platform declared for gold until an international silver standard was set, while the Democratic platform declared for, quote, "the immediate restoration of the free and unlimited coinage of gold and silver at the current legal ratio of 16-1, without waiting for the aid or consent of any other nation," end quote. Hannah stated in an editorial, quote, "men are running wildly to and fro in the eager endeavor to learn which God will save the country and restore prosperity, the gold God or the silver God," end quote. Journal articles on the subject quoted such scripture as Ezekiel, quote, "their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord," end quote. They did not yet know their leader's definition of the, quote, "coin of Christian Science," end quote, which resolved the question and redeemed both gold and silver by taking them out of matter and presenting their true aspect as manifestations of infinite mind. Gold, the silent thoughts of truth and love, which heal the sick. Silver, the spoken word of truth and love, which casts out evil and heals the sick. In the fall of 1896, the leader was, however, more concerned with the currency of Christian Science than with the national hubbub over gold and silver. Her beautiful, enduring definition for currency is, quote, "the written word of truth and love, published and distributed throughout the world, healing sickness and sin." But this currency must be backed up by a gold reserve in human character, end quote. Since 1875, her written word had been healing sickness and sin throughout the world. In addition to Science and Health, she had, since 1883, been sending out this currency from the golden reserve of her own character through the columns of the journal. 14 years of gems from the leader's pen were a treasure trove indeed, but they were no longer available. While politicians were loudly debating the merits of the medals to save the nation, the leader was quietly collecting all the currency she had so freely distributed, repolishing and resetting some of the gems, and preparing once again to publish and distribute this true currency throughout the world.